Golf Smarter number 96 for October 16, 2007.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The hidden keys to a consistent golf swing with Tracy Reed.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thanks for downloading the Golf Smarter podcast. Today, Kenny Nicholson of Edwin Watts Golf will answer questions about purchasing clubs for your children, shaft flex points, and the variables involved in getting backspin on the ball. Our guest today is Tracy Reed, who's a mental game specialist and a biomechanics coach. Once again, I discovered Tracy from a listener's recommendation, so please keep your suggestions coming in because it's what makes this podcast content varied and interesting. Stay tuned to the end of the show because I'll provide a web address that will give Golf Smarter listeners a free preview and discount of Tracy's new full package that's just been released. Welcome, Tracy.
Hello, Fred. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
I received an email from a listener recently. I want to share it with you because I think that you can help this guy. And he hopes that you can help. It's from Dave Kissel of Lake Bluff, Illinois. And he says, I was a standout on my high school team and a former 8 handicap, and now I can't break 95. The wheels have totally come off my game, and there seems to be no end to the erosion of my skills. I've even had 2 rounds over 100 this year, and I haven't done that since I was learning the game as a little kid. I've gone through 3 PGA Pro teachers this year, spending more than $400 on lessons, and none have been able to help me. Additionally, I have spent more than $1,000 on new equipment this year alone. I practice multiple times each week and play 18 to 36 holes each weekend. I'm a healthy 44-year-old guy in the best shape of my life in endurance, strength, and flexibility. Now, frequently, I'll have guests on that talk about how to progress and get people better, but tell him what he can do when the game just seems to get worse and worse.
Okay. Well, first of all, my first thing to say is I don't feel like the Lone Ranger. I actually get this email a lot.
Oh.
I'm amazed at how many people lose their skills, but on the same hand, I'm not. And a lot of the reason that people lose their skills is the older you get, the more conscious you have to be of the things that were natural when you were younger. And that's what I provide. I had to do this for myself because I took up golf at a later age, and I went through all of I went through 5 instructors when I was a 7 handicap. I knew I had a bad swing, and they couldn't fix it. And I went on to learn biomechanics and learn, what is it that you have to be able to really fix your swing? And that is an awareness of what's going on. And that's what I teach people to do. And the awareness comes from your body's balance. And let me explain how this works real quick. There's 2 ways that people try to memorize their golf swing. One is muscle memory, and the other one is actually is performed through body balance. The one that happens by body balance happens in the subconscious, but muscle memory is something that people try to do consciously. The problem with muscle memory is simply that every time you swing, your muscles have either gotten tired or they've gotten warm or cold or loose or stiff, and the signals that the nerves in the muscles send are not the same every time. What happens is your brain is always constantly trying to reassess a different signal. Whereas the balance proprioceptors in the body, which are just the nerve endings in the bottoms of your feet and different places in your body, their job is not to control the muscles until there is a threat to the body that you may fall down and hurt yourself. Those receptors fire millions of times every minute, and they're constantly sending information to your body, and that's what's in use when you walk. It's what's in use when you react to something. if you trip and your body automatically starts, you know, moving to try to get you back under control, that's that instant reaction that your body has. And this is the system that I teach people to get into, okay, to tap into. It's already working in your body 24/7, whether you like it or not. And if you can tap into this system and you can ask it what's going on, you can get an awareness of what's happening with your swing. And with that awareness, you can start making changes that are going to go in the right direction rather than taking a guess and hoping and praying it works. Now, just to give you an idea, there are two golfers in history, Ben Hogan and Tiger Woods. This, as far as I'm concerned, is one of Ben Hogan's big secrets. And this is shown by the way Ben used to practice. It would take him hours sometimes to hit just 40 balls. But between every shot, he would sit back and he would consider that shot. I have a friend of mine who, he's I think in his late 80s, but he once watched Ben Hogan practicing. I'm not sure exactly where he was at the time, but he took some pictures of him, you know, because people do that. And the next day he saw Mr. Hogan in the pro shop and said, "Hey, Mr. Hogan, I've got some pictures of your practice." And Ben took a look at him and said, "Oh, my goodness." He was in street shoes. He asked the professional right there in the shop, he said, "Can I get three balls and a driver, please?" Went out in the driving range, and three balls fixed a problem that's been nagging at him, the problem they saw in those pictures. How in the world could he do it in three balls?
And it's funny. I was thinking, how in the heck, if it was that long ago, did they get the picture the next day?
You got a point there. It may not have been the right next day.
Okay.
The guy that told me the story was old, but he showed me I physically saw the pictures that Ben was looking at. So I know that the pictures are real, and I'm pretty sure the story is real.
And what was it that he identified?
He was having he was actually getting out over his left side. If you take a look at when I took a look at the pictures, the first thing I noticed that during the downswing, his left knee was out over his left side. And if you get to the outside of your feet, and you can see this you can read this in his book of I think the five lessons, you know, that he says to stay on the inside of your feet. If you get to the outside of your feet during the swing, what happens is the body automatically notices an out of balance error and starts to correct. Well, when it does that, it doesn't care about your golf swing anymore.
And I'm going to stop you for a second, and I want you to explain exactly what you mean by getting outside of your feet.
Okay. Well, if you feel, and this is an exercise we're going to do here.
Great.
If you just walk around and feel the bottoms of your feet, you'll notice that you use certain parts of your feet. Well, during the golf swing, and this is via Ben Hogan, you should always stay in the inside half. That means in the arch half rather than the outside edge of the foot. During the swing, does that make sense? Being on the inside half of the outside, in other words, between
yes.
the heel and the ball of the foot, rather than the outside edge. And if you stay on the insides, your muscles can keep working to move that club and to move your body to motivate that club. But the moment you get to the outside, the body automatically says, "Oh, I might be falling down. I've got to correct this." And the moment it starts correcting, it steals from other muscle groups.
So you're saying it really all comes down to balance.
Well, the balance is when you become aware of your balance, it's amazing what your balance tells you, even during movement. If you take a backswing at a speed that you can monitor your balance, and it's not too slow, you can actually correct that backswing during the backswing so that you have your best chance for a downswing. But if the backswing is wrong, the downswing cannot possibly work. So believe it or not, keeping a balanced backswing will balance the club and return it to where it's supposed to be. And just to give you an idea, this brings to mind, there is static balance and dynamic balance, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Dynamic balance is how your body works. The body, once it is in balance and works, it fights to stay in balance, whether you like it or not. That's that auto-balance mechanism. Whereas static balance is balance when you're stationary, when you're not moving. And the problem that 90, maybe 85% of golfers have, especially amateurs, is when they set up, many times they're not in a truly balanced position. You know, they're compensating by using different muscle groups to hold themselves in place. And balance just isn't your position over the earth. It's the opposing muscle groups in the body. Every muscle group has an opposing muscle group. They have to be working evenly. That's what really balance is. So if, for example, your weight is towards your heels and you're reaching forward, what will happen is that you're using the muscles in your back of your legs and your lower back more than you are using your thighs, and that's an out-of-balance position, even though you're not falling down. The moment you start working or moving, dynamic balance takes over and readjusts, so those muscle groups that are opposing start working evenly during movement. Well, what's going to happen to the swing path? It's going to go off because it doesn't. Those muscle groups, the auto-balance system, doesn't care about your swing path. Now, reverse the process. If you start in a balanced position, the moment you start moving, your body will fight to keep you in that position, including everything that you have in your hands. So by starting in balance, you actually increase your ability to bring that club back to the ball square and centered. That's the first starting place where I would say most of my students immediately see an improvement. Are you there?
Oh, I'm here.
Yeah.
you didn't toss out one or two sentences here. I need to absorb this.
But that's the theory. The theory is the fact that as I take my golf club back, I am sensitive to, even if it's a driver, that 13 ounces, as that moves, I can feel that in my feet because that's where you feel the balance. That's where Ben Hogan felt the balance. That's why he said the feet were so important. And if you take the time and close your eyes and walk around, you'll feel it as well. You'll feel it in your feet. And the more accurately you can pinpoint where your weight is during your movement, the more accurately you can control your muscle movement. That's the principle. Believe it or not, if I just tell myself during the backswing, I want to make sure my weight stays in the arch just behind the ball of the foot, that's all I have to do. The picture of that in my mind will control all the muscles in my legs to make sure it stays there. I don't have to think about those muscles or the knee or anything else. Just keeping that picture in my mind controls those.
So did you address that because you thought for the letter that Dave sent us that could possibly be an issue to review quickly for him?
Yes. You have to start, because what happens the older you get, the natural balance you have when you're younger starts going away.
Yeah.
And you have to be a little bit more conscious of it. And when you become conscious of this, then you get control of it, and then you can reinstill it into a subconscious pattern. And the greatest part about it is if something goes wrong, you can just call it back up in the conscious, check it, make sure it's okay, or correct it, and then set it right back in the subconscious. So it's the ability to recall it that you're going to build by becoming conscious of it at first.
So is this the basis, your website, your ebook? It's Golf Swing Control. Is this the basis of your theories?
This is the start of the theory. See, you have to have a connection between the mind and the body to be able to control what the body does. There's two places that you're going to do it. The first one is balance. You have to start in balance, or you just have no chance of getting a good swing out or getting back to the ball, because your body's already changing it. You're fighting it the whole way. That's the starting point. That is also the connection that you have. That's where your awareness of what's going on comes from. And once you have that awareness, then you have the ability to say, this is what happened. You see, when people have an awareness of their body movement, once the golf ball goes away and they know what causes the different movements, they can look at the pattern the golf ball took and say two things. I know the club came across the ball in a certain pattern, and then they can run back the feel in their body that they were subconscious of, but it's there, and they can say, oh, my weight was here, that was the cause. Or they can say, no, my weight was correct, something else was wrong. And they can actually go take a stock of what was happening in their body, because it's recalled, because the subconscious now stores this information for you. And they can say, oh, here is the problem. If you've ever seen a professional in the PGA Tour, after they hit a bad shot, watch them on the course. You'll see them with the caddy. They'll have a little discussion sometimes. They'll take a couple real slow swings, and then sometimes you'll even see them nod their head, put the club back, and walk on. What they're doing is they're fixing the problem before it gets to them, before it starts nagging them and they start worrying about it coming back. They can do that because they have an awareness of their body movement. The greater the awareness, the better the ability to fix it. And this is what Tiger has now, better than anyone else. If you ask Tiger about his ability to focus, he will tell you it comes from really good golf swing fundamentals. But what he's missing, what he's leaving out, is the one word, awareness. He has a very good awareness of his golf swing fundamentals, and when they're not there or they're not quite right, he knows it and can fix it right on the spot.
So post-shot routine is actually very important.
Post-shot and pre-shot.
Uh-huh.
Okay, the pre-shot, what you do, give you an idea what I teach my guys to do. You know, once you get an idea of what shot you're going to hit, if you, again, we're going to go back to Tiger. Watch Tiger on the course. He takes a couple swings. He's not looking at anything. He's not thinking. He's programming that shot into his body and his mind. And when his mind says, yeah, this feels like it, the way it's going to be, then he can step up and hit that shot. So he pre-programs it, and then if the shot doesn't come off like he thought it should, he can go back and call that back up and say, well, here's my program. What happened? Oh, here's what happened. Okay, I've got an issue right here. He can pick the spot out where the two don't agree, and he can work on it.
So much of this is nuance. And I realize as I play longer and longer that I can find these nuances and focus on these nuances. Is it possible for a new golfer to pick up on these little things that mean so much when you get into better play?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, this is the best way for a new golfer to start out, because he's not going to be able to build any bad habits, because monitoring his balance will correct those habits. See, that's the best thing about balance. If you move in balance and you balance the club during a backswing, you can't get out of position. Here's one for you. This is the one that I always get at. You know, you have the one club one plane, two plane swing? Heard of that, right?
Well, yeah, we've had discussions about it. No one's ever really been able to not convince me, but educate me properly for me to understand it. So I'm wide open for more discussion on that one.
Well, here's what I tell people: there's not one plane or two planes. There's 8 billion planes.
Oh,
every
great!
Golfer has their own.
Thanks so much. You're really a big help, Tracy.
Each golfer has their own plane, and the way you find that plane is simply by moving the club in balance. And you can monitor that balance in your hands and your feet. That plane is decided by your body structure. Everybody's is slightly different. Your elbows might point a little different. You might have longer legs, shorter legs. You might have a stocky body. It doesn't really matter. But if you move in balance, that plane will make itself evident. Here's the best part about it. If you move in balance, you don't have to worry about that plane. The club will be where it's supposed to be. It takes away, balance takes away that worry. Am I on plane? Am I in balance? If you're in balance, you're on plane. So, you know, why even worry about what plane you're on? If you're in balance, you're in plane. And that's what my students find very quickly. They can feel it, and they don't have to look at it. They don't have to see it in a mirror. They can feel it and know it's right.
I'm really intrigued by this whole thing of balance, and especially the insides of the feet. As you were talking, I'm sitting here taking practice swings, and I feel myself rocking to the, I'm right-handed, so I'm rocking over to the outside of my right foot.
Okay, now, that is an indicator that you have a slide.
Mm-hmm.
That means your hip, if you're going out to the outside of your right foot, are you right-handed, by the way?
Yes, I am.
Okay, if you're going out to the outside of your right foot, that is an indicator. That says that when you start your backswing, what's happening is your hips are moving laterally to the right, whereas what they should be doing is they should be turning. So here's how you fix that, okay? First of all, when you set up for your swing, how much does your body tilt to the right as a right-hander?
During my swing or in a dress?
when you set up at address, do you tilt your body away from the target? Do you tilt it to the right?
No.
Okay, let me explain. This is what almost all instructors completely leave out of the setup, and is one of the most crucial parts. There's three reasons why you need to tilt to the right as a right-hander when you set up. First of all, your right hand is lower on the club than the left. If you don't tilt, what that forces you to do is open your shoulders, and that means you're going to come across the ball outside to in and slice it.
Okay, I need to stop you for a second. When you say tilt, are you meaning put more pressure on, more weight on my right foot, or are you talking about my shoulders tipping over to the right side?
I'm saying what you do is from the waist up to your neck, your spine will tilt from the waist to the right.
Okay, so it's
shoulders, not your shoulders. You will end up with more weight on the right side, and that's important because that's another reason. I'll explain that in a second. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But you should tilt from the waist to the right, okay? And it should be just enough to allow the right hand to be at the proper place on the club handle and allow your body to be comfortably lined up, your chest to be comfortably lined up with the target, okay? Allowing the right elbow, okay, to probably hang down straight and almost touch your body, okay? Now, I'm just going to say, on my website, free, there's a whole setup process that took me almost 12 years to develop. It's a combination of some other people's setup drills, plus a lot of what I've found from biomechanics. And what this drill does, and you can go to this, and like I said, give this away free because this is the first indication that this stuff works. It will set up any golfer in the proper setup, in balance, and it compensates for their body structure, okay? And it took me a long time because I wanted to make sure that this setup compensated for body structure in club. Okay, so it's there. So, you know, this may not be complete, and you can complete it by filling this in from the website, but I mean, I just wanted to let you know that that's there for any golfer to start with, okay, to show that this works. Okay, so your question was, you were asking about this, you want to tilt to the right from the waist, enough to make sure that your right hand is in place, and there's a reason for it. First of all, it's because your hand is lower on the club. Okay, you've got to compensate so that you can stay in line with the target. Number two, okay, the golf swing has two pivot points. Biomechanically, there's no way around it. If anybody tells you there's one, it's not biomechanically correct. You've got two hip joints. Okay, so we swing back, we turn back on the backswing on the right one, and we turn forward in the downswing on the left. But here's the part that's always missed when you get to the transition. You first have to set a majority of weight in a post position on either hip before you can turn on it. So by tilting to the right, we also get a majority of weight on that hip so that when you start moving, that hip doesn't try to slide. It stays in place. And that's going to help you with your slide, okay? That's the second reason, okay? The third reason is because that is a socket and ball joint. And the way the femur comes up and it has a bend, and it lines up with that ball. If you do not angle that hip, the moment the hip slides over, it creates a locked position where that joint can't move anymore. So not only do you slide, but it locks the hip in a place where you're stuck with only the upper body to make the swing. Okay, so by tilting to the right, you open that up and allow that hip free movement for as much as you need it to move. So there's three reasons, all biomechanical reasons, why you need to tilt to the right. And I have talked to professionals that did not understand this and had no clue as to why it happened. And then once they start doing it, they're like, oh, wow, this makes the swing a lot easier. Okay, so now that you're tilted to the right, I imagine you are, aren't you?
Yeah, and then am I noticing that the upper part of my left side of my body is almost aligned from my foot all the way up when I'm tilted a little bit, or is that too much tilt? Is it like a straight line?
Like I said, what you do is is you just tilt just enough to allow that hand. Your arm should be hanging straight down from your shoulders, just to now allow that right hand to get in the proper position on the club. That's as far as you tilt. It's only about 8 degrees.
Okay. Oh, it's not much at all.
Right. It's only about 8 degrees. And what you do is, if you start, Saver, you don't have a club in your hand, do you?
No.
Okay. Okay, just start from a regular centered position with your hands together. Tilt to the right until you see the hand come down where it is just below, the palm is just below the fingers of the left hand. That's how much you want to tilt.
The palm is just below, not the fingertips, but just...
The base of the palm is just below the start of the fingers of the left hand. Does that make sense?
Oh, that much. Okay.
Okay. So, basically, that's about as much as you're going to tilt. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, again, the way you check it is you go ahead and take your grip, make sure you're lined up, you allow your right hand to just come off your grip, and then just let it just sink back, and if it goes back to the right position, you're there. If it's too low, you have too much tilt. If it's too high, you have not enough. Okay, so it's an easy check, and you can do this once you get set up.
And you have visuals on your website to help us through this?
There. I believe I have some, yes.
Okay, good.
During the setup drill, there's some there. And my email, you can email me this stuff, and I'm happy to answer these questions because, again, this is all free. I want people to understand this because this is what keeps people from getting injured when they play.
Ooh.
And that's the reason I don't play professionally is because I have a major injury in my back, and if I didn't have this injury, this information would never get out because this would be my edge on tour. I'm sorry, but but because of that injury, because there's no way I can play more than two rounds of golf, in a row. I've decided that it's silly to hold this stuff back. I've taken all the time to find this. Let's go ahead and make this stuff available to people. Because it's just not available anywhere else.
And why is that? Why is it not being taught at the PGA professional schools? I mean, you got people who are paying lots of money wanting to become PGA professionals, PGA instructors, but they're not getting information like this. Why do you think that is?
Well, I don't know exactly. I know a few PGA professionals have gone through the PGA program, and then they get in a club, and they're giving lessons. Well, the program is a management program. You learn to manage the club.
Oh.
You have to take the PAT to prove you can play, and I imagine, and I'm only speculating because I really don't know why it is. I wish I did, but they figure since you can play, you should be able to show people what you can do. But to be a true instructor, to be a true golf instructor, you have to be an instructor first. You have to be able to communicate. And most of the people I talk to say, that's the difference. I can communicate what's happening from a nuts and bolts level all the way down to how it feels. And many of these instructors don't know that. Plus, I've taken the time to learn the biomechanics so that I can explain it because I understand it. And once you learn the biomechanics, not only can you explain it, but you can see it a mile away. I can walk down a driving range, and out of my peripheral vision, I can tell you what's going on with every golfer as they swing the club.
Wow.
It's almost haunting me. but it's, believe it or not, it's that simple because you learn where the core of movement comes from, how it works, and when I teach a beginner this stuff and I start them with balance and I get the proper setup, usually I can get them playing 80s to 90s in about three lessons. That sounds pretty wild, but that's what I'm used to seeing. Because they start out with the right swing. They start out with a very simple, easy movement, and all they have to do is get used to it.
Well, if that claim holds true, there's a lot of people, I think, who are listening right now that are going to be calling you.
That's good. one of the things, that's the way why the course was set up the way it was. Most of the people who get my course, they usually start off by saying, hey, listen, I want to get some lessons. I said, look, it's cheaper because my rate is pretty high because I'm in demand. It's cheaper to get the course and follow the course. And then once you have some questions, once you've worked with it, then give me a call. If I can't answer them by email or the phone, then we'll get together. But I know that people aren't made out of money. And like the gentleman you were talking about before, they spend thousands of dollars trying to figure this stuff out. And once they get it, they're like, why didn't I know this before? But my position is, look, you should have this, and it shouldn't be expensive. And I've actually had instructors say, wait a minute, you can fix this in two lessons? Isn't that bad for golf instruction industry?
Interesting. Well, yeah. Why don't you let people know how to get this instruction and become better golfers?
Okay. We just have a DVD that's out.
Oh, congratulations.
The company that's doing this for me is, I called them up and said, look, I want to make sure these guys can get a special for anybody that's listening to this podcast, because it's the only place that's being advertised right now. I advise going ahead and going through, using the setup drill first, seeing how that works for you, then go through the free newsletters, see what they do for you, ask me questions, and if this works for you, then get the whole thing, because there is so much more that I do for people. And my professionals that I teach see that almost immediately when I work with them.
Tracy Reed, this is really interesting stuff, and hopefully, because I have a lot of questions left to ask you, you'll come back and join us on the Golf Smarter podcast once again?
Oh, I would love to. This has been great. I think you're doing a wonderful, wonderful thing for a lot of people. I think the mental side of golf is one that just doesn't get the right attention. And, golf psychology, I don't believe in it. I believe that it should be focus, and that's the edge that Tiger has. So that's where I'm at, and I'll be happy to come back and answer any more questions that you have. I think it's a great thing.
And we think it's a great thing that Kenny Nicholson of Edwin Watts Golf is here to answer our questions. Do you have a question about specific golf gear or are baffled about what to look for in a category of golf products? Well, Kenny Nicholson has the answers, and he works at Edwin Watts Golf. Did you know that? I'm sure you did. If we use your question on the show, you're going to get a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts Golf hat. To submit your question, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the button labeled Ask Kenny. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and edwinwattsgolf.com, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Hi, Kenny.
Hey, Fred. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, thank you. And you're well, I hope?
I am doing well, besides some rainy weather
well,
in the great state of Florida.
And that's not a terrible thing, because I've been hearing about droughts in the Southeast.
Oh, I know. And it is Tuesday, and I do have to work regardless. So we need it as bad as anybody right now.
Yeah, but this is kind of Ask Kenny question from Fred. What impact will the drought have on golf course maintenance?
Well, just the fairways seem to get harder and brown. It's hard to keep that much water, especially when your reservoirs are running dry. Most of them pull water from lakes, and when your lakes start getting low, obviously it interferes with your watering. But for the most part, they do a really good job, as with anywhere, for the most part. But it's been extremely dry here. We do need the rain. As long as it rains Monday through Friday and I'm at work, that's fine. Just on the weekend when I'm off, I'd like to be able to enjoy it without rainy weather.
Yeah, absolutely. You're not alone in that one. We all feel the same way. Well, we got some rain out here the other day, and it's going to come and go and come and go. Our season has begun. So, and now for sports. Now that we've done the weather report, let's move on to sports. Our first question comes from Christopher Bluer in Milton, Georgia. He says, my oldest son is 11 and is growing out of his current clubs. I need to start looking for a new set for him. He wants to know if he's better off to stay with something like the U.S. Kids set, move him into cut-down ladies set, or even maybe move him over to a hybrid set. Or at 11 years old, should he go get fitted?
What you have to look at, regardless of age, is more or less height. Is he average height? Is he shorter than your average 11-year-old or taller? Because U.S. Kids does a great job of fitting by height. So they go all the way up to 66 inches, and Ping also in their Moxie line, which is designed for ages 9 to 11, would probably fit him as well, but not for an extended period of time. The thing about moving a child into a lady set or a hybrid set per se is weight is going to be the key factor there. If the clubs are too heavy for him, obviously the swing speed's going to go down. He's not going to be able to flex the shaft. The ball's not going to get airborne. There's a lot of things that can have an adverse effect in putting them into the wrong golf clubs. What you want to do is still be able to find a junior club where the weight and the shaft match their height or age, for that matter. It's a good question. I would recommend going along the lines of still staying in a junior club while he's still 11 years old. When they get up 13, 14 years old, that's when you want to start looking at getting into a fitted set of golf clubs for them. Lessons are a great idea, even though he's 11. That's not a problem. And you might be able to get an opinion from your PGA professional that you get lessons from. But I would highly recommend staying into some type of junior club at this point.
And not be fitted yet. Wait till he's about 13 or 14?
Yeah, but just because, I mean, the way that they make the golf clubs, you can go by height. So the lie angle is dictated by height. You know, when you go get fitted is when you've stopped growing and you need to find out if you need flat, upright, standard, extra length, shorter, whatever you might need. You know, that's going to be the telltale factor. But the problem is he's going to continue to grow rapidly over the next several years. So I would just take the heights chart, fit him into something that he can grow into just a little bit and go from there.
You and I both have a couple of kids each, and we know that our kids are smarter and better at everything than anybody's.
We haven't said that yet. But that's correct.
But it's, you know what? We all feel that way. I don't care who it is. We all feel that way about our children. So we want to advance them even further than they need to be at this point. Let's spend another minute talking about the U.S. Kids Club set. I think they're really fabulous, and I really like when I see on the course people with their kids having the U.S. kids. It's a fabulous program. They get you started early, and they really hold your hand all the way through until you grow out of them. Can you give us a rundown on that, please?
They do, because they have a trade-in, trade-up program where you can basically get a discount on trading your previous U.S. kids clubs in and moving into another golf club. And then they also have what they call the sixth club free. If you buy five, you get one free with a coupon through U.S. Kids. So they take, a great approach as far as continuing your child in golf. I think that that's a wonderful opportunity. Then the way that I look at it is they specialize in only kids clubs. That is their sole purpose in the golf business. So everything about them is related to kids.
And what age do they start kids, or what size would your kids begin with?
You can start at three and go all the way up to 66 inches. Hmm. Obviously, obviously 3 years old. And obviously, kids start younger than that, but they, you know, getting a club that's extremely small for a 1 or 2 year old that's just learning how to walk. But, I mean, they start very, very young, and they want to keep you in their brand as long as they can, and they do a very good job of marketing that.
And you don't have to go to uskidsclubs.com to purchase them. You can purchase that at Edwin Watts Golf, correct?
That is correct. And they do have a lifetime warranty on them as well.
Explain life to whose lifetime? Well, because, what does that mean?
Can
you say for your grandchildren too? I mean, what does that mean?
No, when you have a kid that a lot of us have kids out there, and you know that they can be rough on equipment in this case.
Than we can. Come on, adults are the ones who are breaking clubs over their heads and throwing them into the water.
Yeah, well, I agree. It's been a while, but I do agree. But they do, if the shaft breaks for any reason, obviously they'll replace it at no charge. That's one, and that's really all you have to worry about. If something malfunctions on the golf club, they will take care of it for the life of the golf club or whoever's using them.
And let's say that the Golf Smarter podcast has a lifetime guarantee on the information that we give out to.
Correct. There you go. Remember that.
Absolutely. That the information that we provide will help you for the rest of your golfing life. Don't break the club over your head. Question number two from our buddy over in Japan, Hiro Kobayashi, has a question about the shaft flex point. Diamana comes with three models, the white or the D, the blue S, or the red M, that all have different flex points from mid-high to high. He wants to know what the effect this has. Is a midpoint easier to get the ball in the air but harder to control, whereas a high point may not get the ball in the air high, but is easier to control?
The way that I look at it is he's right. Flex point or bend point, people use different terms for that. That has to do with where the shaft is going to flex. The lower the flex point, meaning down towards the head of the golf club, the easier the ball is going to get airborne. You can call it flex point, bend point, kick point, whatever you want to. That helps get trajectory. So if you have a mid to high flex point shaft, it's going to bring the trajectory down. Does that make it easier to control? In my opinion, anytime you add loft, you add forgiveness. Okay, so if you're hitting a 10.5 degree driver with a mid to high flex point, the trajectory is going to be lower. If you have a mid to low flex point, the trajectory is going to be higher. And I, in my opinion, think it can be a little bit easier to control. The other variable that you have to throw in there is torque. When you have a lower torque shaft, obviously, I think you're able to control that a little bit more. So that's the other variable that you have to throw in there. The and depending on shafts that you go with, he's specifically talking about Diamante, and there's obviously a plethora of other shaft companies out there. When you go with a regular flex, typically what you're going to find is something that's going to be mid to low, you know, or low kick point on a senior or ladies flex. And anytime you go stiff or extra stiff, you have that option of going mid to high or high flex point. But a very good question.
Yeah, can I get a clarification on something? I understand the midpoint, but when you say a high flex point, does that mean the flex point is closer to the grip or closer?
That
to
is
the...
correct. Yeah,
okay, so that's the high,
the grip.
And the high flex point is going
to
give you a
higher ball flight.
Lower ball flight. Okay, I'm just writing. Correct. I'm taking notes here because I thought that was absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, a low flex point is going to give you a high ball flight or trajectory, and a high flex point is going to give you a lower ball flight. There, you know, we talk about getting fitted and everything for drivers, especially because it has so much to do with launch angle and spin rates. And, you know, shafts are probably the most important element in the golf club. I call it, I always say it's the engine that drives the car, basically, because if you have the wrong shaft in there, the club's not going to perform that well. I mean, when we go to simulators and get fitted, that's why Callaway has the OptiFit system, where you know you have the right loft-headed golf club, and they're able to use this OptiFit system and just basically change shafts. So you're able to try a plethora of shafts out there and find out which one has the correct launch angle and spin rate for you. So shafts are a very important element. There is an awful lot to learn about them. You know, but if you go to any of the fitting, you know, you can go to Ping's WebFit or any of the other companies that have WebFit capability, you can try to punch in your trajectory, swing speed, things of that nature, and it'll tell you what you need to get you pretty close.
Great. Great. Well, I also wrote back to Hiro Kobayashi, who sent this question, and I told him, I'm going to send you a hat, but I want a picture of you wearing the hat in your business suit at work. So
the requirements are getting stringent.
I think it's going to be fun because I know he's an executive for a hotel chain, and I want to see him wearing one of our hats somewhere. We got to put these on the website. Mm. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Okay, and now that we've totally embarrassed you, Hito, I'm so sorry. Our last question comes from Joe Dolan, from Wazian, Ohio. Says, I'm 50 years old, a 2 handicap. He has a Cobra X-Speed driver, 9.5 degree, Mizuno MP60 irons. He drives the ball between 275 to 285 yards. Usually plays a Pro V1 ball. Says, I hit the ball straight and I don't work the ball much. What ball should I use to make the ball stop on the green and to for his pitch shots as well? What ball should he be using?
And there's so many variables that come into play there when you talk about stopping the golf ball. I mean, I went out to Portland, obviously, to see Nike a couple of weeks ago and got to play bent grass greens. And like I told you when we were talking, I mean, I was spinning the ball all over the place. You know, I'm not used to that. Where we live, we have Bermuda greens. They're not quite as soft. They are receptive, but to me, they don't spin near as much. So conditions have a lot to do with that. You know, what's the firmness of the green? What kind of grass are you playing on?
If there's a drought going on.
Exactly. And then it looks like you hit the cart path when you landed right in the middle of the green 2 feet from the... And then it also has to do with the way you swing the golf club. How many times have you been watching the PGA Tour and you see Tiger and they're talking about, you know, he hits this shot where he's kind of stiff-armed coming through and he doesn't finish all the way on a wedge or something. And they say he's trying to control the spin on this shot. And you obviously see that. The ball might skip one time and just stop versus where it comes and backs up. So swing has a lot to do with that. Are you a very wristy type player? What I mean by that, you know, do you use a lot of wrist? Are you an arm swinger? Somebody that is typically more of an arm type swinger, they don't generate as much ball spin as somebody that is a very wristy player. And also, if you take a divot, are you the type of player that likes to pick the ball? Or are you the type of guy that likes to smash it down into the ground and take a big old divot? That type of player that takes a big divot typically compresses the ball more and generates more spin. So there's, I think, golf balls, he needs to try something. He's in the right golf ball. He's obviously a very good golfer. With, you know, his handicap and swing speed tells me that, you know, he's hitting the ball 270 to 285 or whatever with his driver. He's generating enough club head speed to compress that golf ball.
Yeah.
You know, it has, I think it has a lot more to do with some other factors, not just the golf ball, but what type of golf swing he has and what type of golf course he's playing. I mean, chip shots, that's one thing. It's real, you know, it's kind of hard. You see Phil and Tiger hit these flop shots all the time that stop on a dime or, and then you're, you know, you're out there and you're like, okay, I got 30 yards. I got a bunker in front. I got a real tight pin. I got to hit this lob wedge straight up in the air and stop it. Next thing you know, you hit the same shot. The ball goes straight up in the air and it lands on the green 5 feet from the hole and you're 15 feet high. And you're like, how did they do it?
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
called practice, practice, practice. but I mean, there's a lot of elements there. I think he's playing the right ball. You might want to, you know, try a couple other golf balls out there. You know, Srixon, Callaway, Precept, there's Nike. There's a lot of brands out there that he can try, that are in that same category and see, you know, hey, one might work a little bit better for him.
Yeah. And I've been trying different balls lately and I kind of tend to lean to one ball, but I'll try another one. I'll try another one. And for some reason, you know, cause I can't shape my shots. I can't get a good spin on it. I'm happy when I can hit the ball to where I'm pointing it to. And some balls, I guess it's just the way I'm playing that day, but I'll come out of it going, I don't like that ball. You know,
I mean, you can tell. I mean, feel is everything to me. When you're around the greens, when you're on the green, when you're chipping and putting, to me, that's the most important element to the golf ball for me. I want to be able to feel a certain type feel.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I will tell you, though, the major manufacturers out there that produce golf balls, to me, there's not a huge difference, but there are subtle differences. You just need to find the one that fits your game.
Right. And, you know, if you're a two handicap like Joe is, then he'll probably understand that feeling.
He will.
You know, when you're a 15 or a 25 handicap, that's not going to be your main concern.
No, it feels not. But I mean, it is a concern, but it's not going to be your main concern.
Right.
Your main concern is, you know, is obviously try to knock some strokes off your game, and then we'll get, you know, I need feel, trajectory, spin, all those things in a golf ball. So, to the better player, the golf ball can make a huge difference. But to the average player, what you want to look at is something that just has a real good feel to you and performs what you need. But obviously, we want to work on getting you in the right equipment and getting your scores lowered.
Well, that's what I love so much about doing this podcast on a regular basis is I get to talk to people like Tracy Reed, who was on just before you came on, who gives phenomenal information about the mental part and mechanical things. But there's so much about the equipment side that you inform us on that I just think is awesome. Thank you.
I enjoy doing it. I mean, I have to be honest with you. I get just as excited as you do when a new product comes out, or especially a new product that I'm going to use.
Well, and the questions that are coming in from all over the place, from people of different skill levels, from different parts of the world, these are questions I'd never be able to come up with. That's so awesome that we get to share this information with everyone.
It's a testament to how passionate they are.
Yeah, yeah. And we thank all of you for participating. And so to thank you for participating, we'd like to give something away. And this week we're giving away the Frankly Frog putter. Now, you were just telling me this is a brand new putter from Frankly Frog, from Frank Thomas of Frankly Frog, and it's the F16. This is a $245 putter. So if you'd like to enter for our drawing, we are going to make the deadline for this, which I'm sorry I didn't mention last week. Deadline for entry is October 23rd, 2007. The entry deadline is noon on Monday, October 23rd, and we'll announce the winner next week on October 24th. To enter to win, please go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the word contest just below the Edwin Watts Golf banner. Once you're there, fill out the shipping information and the verification code and click submit. You only need to enter once per email address. You don't need to enter multiple times because we're going to eliminate those entries. The contest, not all the entries, everyone gets one entry. And let's also remind everybody, now that shopping season's going to start getting hot and heavy with the holidays coming up, hey, it's not even Thanksgiving, it's not even Halloween, and I'm talking about the shopping holiday. I love it.
Don't procrastinate.
No, not at all. Not on your golf purchases, because you don't want to buy things during winter. As a Golf Smarter listener, you receive 10% off of your purchases, and you get free shipping for your orders. There are some restrictions that apply, but mostly they don't. So please, take advantage of this offer that Edwin Watts Golf is providing. To get that discount and free shipping, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the Edwin Watts banner at the top of the page. And right there, you'll see all the instructions on how to get your free shipping and your 10% discount. Kenny Nicholson, Edwin Watts Golf, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Fred.
And thanks again to Tracy Reed of the Ultimate Golf System. Now, you may have noticed that I didn't mention his website in the interview. Since we recorded this conversation a couple weeks ago with Tracy, the URL has changed, and they've created a special promotion just for the Golf Smarter podcast audience. Now, please check out ultimategolfsystem.com/smarter. And along with being able to sign in to get free video previews of the DVD, you'll also have the chance to receive a discount on your purchase. The package generally sells for $197, but as a Golf Smarter listener, you only pay $127, which includes two DVDs, an audio CD, and special bonus reports. Ah, membership has its privileges, doesn't it? Again, it's ultimategolfsystem.com/smarter. If you can't write that down right now or not at your computer, check out the show notes for full details. Now, if you're not sure how to find the show notes, we've gone over this in the past, but it's been a while. Send me a note and I'll write you simple to follow instructions on how to find your show notes either on your computer or on your iPod. All right? Great. We close this week's show with a quote submitted by Ed Mikas of Larchmont, New York. Recently, Ed asked a colleague how to get good at golf. He responded with, "Start when you're six." If you have any questions, comments, quotes, or requests, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarterpodcast.com.
Hi, I'm Joanne Green. This week on the Good Dog Podcast, learn how Guide Dogs for the Blind is helping to find a cure for cancer in both dogs and humans. For decades, they've kept records on the DNA of their dogs, and this information will now be used by the Canine Cancer Genome Project of the National Institutes of Health. It's a fascinating story and a great conversation on this week's Good Dog Podcast, free on iTunes and at smarterpodcasts.com.